Canto 33. Lifting his mouth from that most savage kind of meal, the sinner wiped it on the hair of just the head he'd wasted from behind, and thus began. You ask me to declare a desperate grief, which merely in my mind torments my heart before I talk. And yet, if what I say could be the seed that bore the fruit of infamy, for him I get my only food from, I will speak and more. I'll speak and weep together. I can't guess who you might be, and by what means you came down here. But when I hear your bold address, I sense a Florentine. So know my name, Count Ugolino. The archbishop here, Ruggeri, is my neighbor. Let me tell you why. How by his wiles he drew me near to him, and won my trust so that I fell beneath his thrall, was captured and was slain. I needn't say all that. But what you don't know yet, just how my death in pain was cruel beyond imagining, you won't be spared from hearing, and then you may see how wrong he was. A mere slit in the wall of that loft they named Hunger after me, and in which others yet beyond recall will be shut up, had shown me through its chink already several moons, when a bad dream shredded the veil of all I liked to think the future held. This man was made to seem a lord and master hunting wolf and whelps on that high hill for which the Pisans can't see Lucca. With hounds lean, trained, their cruel yelps echoing eagerly he'd sent, I shan't pretend I didn't see the wolves were meant for people, his prey racing out ahead, and soon, from fear and effort, the legs went in father and in son, and then they bled from flanks pulled open, slain where they fell spent, ripped up by sharp fangs. The Gualandi died, along with the Sismondi. Pieces torn from the Lanfranchi were strewn far and wide. It was a shambles. Then, before the dawn, when I awoke, I heard my children cry while still asleep. But I forgot to warn you of this news, and they were there, and I could hear them beg for bread. You're cruel indeed, if you do not grieve. Now you have in view what my sad heart foresaw. And if you need worse things to make you weep, then why do you weep ever? But by now they were awake. Our meager daily ration was now due. Each boy was still afraid from the heartache felt in his dream, and then I heard below that foul keep's front door being shut with nails. At which, without a word, lest they should know from my voice how a heart feels when it fails, I looked into the faces of my sons. I didn't weep, for I had turned to stone within. They wept, and of my little ones, Anselm, the smallest, said all on his own, Father, why do you look like that? What's wrong? And still I shed no tears, nor all that day gave answer, and the next night was so long. And still I didn't, till the first small ray of light from the next sun had reached the world, and as that beam invaded our sad cell, I saw lit clearly, where its flag unfurled, four faces, and I knew them all too well. Those faces looked like mine. I bit my hands for grief, but why they thought it must have been for hunger, any starved man understands. They rose as one. You must know what I mean when I say that all four said the same thing. Their voices added up to this. Far less pain there will be for us if you should feed on us, Father, for you gave us the dress of mortal flesh. Now it is what you need, so take it back. And not to make them more unhappy, I was silent. For 2 days we all were, and how was it you forbore to open up hard earth? Did you want praise for steadfastness? And then the fourth day dawned, and Gaddo threw himself down at my feet. Father, he cried, how is it that you have scorned to help me? Is there anything to eat? He died then. And as you see me, I saw my other three in 2 days, dying one by one. And though I heard them breathe no more, I held them close and stroked them, while the sun came back twice. I kept calling them by name. and felt for them, for I was blind by then. And then the strength of hunger overcame even my grief. That said, he seized again, just as before, but with his eyes aslant, that wretched skull, and how his teeth were strong. You'd have to measure by the way dogs plant their fangs in bones. Ah, Pisa! Though the song of our word, yes, joins all of Italy, including you, you still shame all the rest. Your neighbors, for some reason, leave you free of punishment. Here's how it would be best. Capraia and Gorgona out to sea. Shift in and bar the Arno's mouth to drown your every soul. Count Ugolino had the name of selling out and bringing down your strongholds, and that fault, I grant, was bad. But torturing his children, that was worse, and that was you. Youth made them innocent. Besides the two I just named in my verse, Brigata, Uguccione also went through agony because of you. We call the new Thebes for your barbarous cruelties. And further on, another tribe were all swathed roughly in thick ice, but did not freeze face downward. They froze face up. Weeping there allows no weeping. Pain trapped in the eyes turns inward to increase itself, for where the first tears coalesce, they crystallize into a visor. Underneath the brow, each cup was full. And though my frozen face felt nothing, like a callous, still somehow, I felt the wind, and more than just a trace. Master, I said, what causes this? I thought all heat down here was quenched. And he to me, your eyes will soon be able to report directly, for the cause you'll plainly see that drives the blast. And from his frozen crust, one of the wretches cried, O soul so cruel, you roam free in the last pit of despair. Lift off my brittle veils and break the rule, that I might just a little give release to the sadness that swells my heart before my tears freeze up again, so they will cease where they began. And I to him, you wish my help? Then tell me who you are. And should I fail you, may I go down like a fish to the bottom of the ice. He understood and spoke. I am the evil garden's fruit, Fra Alberico, he who called down doom on his own brother and his son to boot. I ask for fruit there in the dining room. That was the sign. Now here in this cold tomb, it's date for fig, which means that my return on outlay is far more than I foresaw. I said, you mean you're dead? I live and learn. My body's life up there is a closed door to me, he said. This zone that gathers in the treacherous to guests, and so is named for Ptolemy, exemplar of that sin, is ranked so high that some who have been shamed come sooner to their fate than Atropos determines death. That you might lift the glaze of grief from my eyes with less sense of loss, know that a soul like mine, when it betrays, loses its body to a devil who controls it henceforth till its time comes round. And then this tank is where the soul comes to, falling headlong. The body might be found above of this shade, spending winter here behind me. You must know, you just came down. Ser Brancadoria. And many a year has passed since he fell to his cold renown, locked in the ice. You're fooling me, I fear, I said, for Brancadoria never died. He eats and drinks, wears clothes, lies down in sleep. And he, up in the ditch of the black tide, where evil claws tend sticky pitch and keep watch on the bubbles, they had not yet seen a sign of Michael's Anke, when this shade gave up its body to an imp. He'd been in league with a near kinsman. They both made with Branca's father-in-law caught in between the mischief, and that other there acquired a devil for his body so his soul could come to us. Now do what I desired. Reach out your hand and make my poor eyes whole. Open them up. And I did not, and felt that it was courtesy to scorn the hopes of that man. Let his eyes wait till they melt, Ah, Genoese, you that know all the ropes of deep corruption, yet know not the first thing of good custom, how are you not flung out of this world? For right there, with the worst Romagna has to offer, I was faced with one of you who for his deeds is cursed, in soul, to lie there in the frozen lake, in body, through the world to walk awake.